It's time to take a stand for truth. Joining me, a world-class biologist who says we do not have to yield biblical truth because of scientific truth.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, friends, if you've listened to the broadcast for a period of time, you know that my expertise is not in science. I am not a scientist. And when I have the opportunity to dialogue with a scientist who's also a committed follower of Jesus, I take that opportunity. I'm delighted to have back with me in the studio a man who holds a PhD in chemistry with an emphasis on biochemistry from the University of Ohio, received distinguished scholarship awards when he was there, and is now a key man. In fact, I've got the executive vice president of research and apologetics at Reasons to Believe, the website reasons.org. Dr. Fuzz Rana, in the Charlotte area this week. Thanks for joining us today on the broadcast.
Well, Michael, thanks for having me with you. It's a pleasure to be here, as always.
Wonderful. The theme this week, friends, is it's time to take a stand. It's our theme for the entire week. And I want to talk about that today in the context of apologetics, in the context of believers not yielding ground to the world, not yielding ground to science, as if it's impossible for us to hold to biblical truth and be scientifically literate at the same time. If you've got a question for my guest, here's the number to call, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Now, he's going to be with me for the next hour. The second hour, I will not have him with me. So if you have a scientific question, this is the hour to ask it. So, Fuzz, let me ask you this. You studied at a secular university. I imagine most of the professors you studied with were not Christians.
That's true.
All right. When you are in that atmosphere, is there kind of an intimidating attitude that says if you're smart, if you're educated, if you're scientific, you can't believe the Bible?
I think that's by and large the prevailing attitude that you see among many in the scientific community. Now, I had the good fortune when I was in graduate school, that's where I actually became a Christian, studying biochemistry and just looking at the elegant design of biochemical systems convinced me there had to be a creator, and it was through a series of events that led me to openly evaluate what Scripture taught, and reading through the Sermon on the Mount convinced me of my sin and the lordship of Jesus Christ, and I viewed Jesus, again, as my Lord and my Savior and committed my life to Christ. But at that time when I was in graduate school, while most of my professors that I had who I admired deeply and to this day have a deep fondness for, were atheists, or at best were agnostic. But at that particular time, there wasn't, even though they knew I was a Christian, there wasn't a lot of persecution that I had received or would have received from them. And so they still treat me with a lot of respect.
Did they pity you on any level?
Well, you know, I think they probably are scratching their heads. How on earth could this guy suddenly abandon science and become an apologist, you know, that type of thing. But it's a very different environment today. And I think part of it is because of the success of the intelligent design movement and the challenge that the intelligent design movement is bringing into the public square that has caused a lot of scientists to react in a very negative way against people who would espouse a Christian perspective. So it's gone from, you know, people scratching their head thinking you're probably off your rocker, but you know, we're not going to persecute you, to now not only scratching their head saying you're off your rocker, but actively going after somebody who would espouse a biblical worldview in an open way and argue that that biblical worldview would actually impact how they approached science itself. It's okay to have a biblical worldview if you don't let that encroach upon how you do science. But
right.
As soon as you try to bring them together.
Right. Live in your little religious world. Believe what you want to believe. When it comes to science, we have cold, hard facts. Let's talk about the intimidation. Let's talk about why many young people, high school, college, lose their faith because of science. And let's come up with some answers. We'll do it today, right here on The Line of Fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
My guest today on The Line of Fire this entire hour, Dr. Fuzz Rana. He is the Executive Vice President of Research and Apologetics at an absolutely wonderful ministry, one of the key frontline apologetics ministries in the world. And because they're focused on science, playing an absolutely key role, their website, reasons.org, their daily updates there, their new articles, tons of relevant information, and then great resources, many books and DVDs that they have put out, reasons.org. If you have a question for Dr. Rana, he can answer the wider scope of Christianity and science, the Bible and science questions, and then in particular, biochemistry is his field of academic training. The number to call, 866-348-7884. Before we go to the phones, before I get back to Dr. Rana and address the intimidation that many young people feel as they're in high school, college, and the importance of giving them solid apologetic answers, I want to remind you that this week, as we have a matching donor standing with us and multiplying your funds for our radio ministry outreach, for your gift of any size, I want to send you two really important resources, an audio CD, The Spineless Gospel of Tolerance and Acceptance, a message I brought at Nyack College in New York City 2 months ago. It'll stir your heart. It will further equip you. And my mini book, The Jesus Manifesto, that will awaken within your heart a desire to be a world changer. Your gift of any size. So if you're blessed by this broadcast and what we do, stand with us. The number to call, 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978. Again, your gift of any size will send you the CD and the mini book. Fuzz, many of our listeners know my story, that my high school years, when we got to serious science classes, I was getting high, so I didn't pay attention. I missed a lot of classes. Then when I got saved, right before I got saved, we had gone on strike in our high school, part of the culture of the late 60s, early 70s. We went on strike. We got our own school that had no formal classes and so on. So I had no science classes the last 2 years of high school. Then when I started college, I had a different focus, then got into languages and college and grad school. So I took no science classes in college. So I've tried to catch up with certain things, but I never got challenged with the theory of evolution the way so many get challenged. And is it true that a lot of kids raised in the faith, either through high school or college education, fall away, or at least for a period of time, because of evolutionary arguments?
The sad truth is that indeed happens. And I think part of the problem is the church as a whole is not doing a good job of equipping students as they go off to college to begin to be able to process the information they're going to be getting in science courses. And so oftentimes the information that is presented to them is presented from a particular worldview perspective, namely one of a naturalistic or an atheistic perspective. And then the scientific data is interpreted for them from an evolutionary vantage point. And so when that happens, it looks as if there is overwhelming evidence for biological evolution. There is overwhelming evidence that science is the appropriate worldview, or the scientific mindset is the appropriate worldview. That's where truth resides. And if students aren't equipped to address those challenges ahead of time, I think oftentimes they feel as if the Christian faith simply cannot withstand scientific scrutiny, and then they walk away from the faith. And of course, in college, there's a whole lot of temptations coming your way as well from a lifestyle standpoint. And so when you couple those two things together, here becomes a convenient excuse for walking away from the faith if there are moral pressures that you're feeling. But for some, they really feel intellectually there's no way they can sustain their faith. And so it's really through an academic bullying and peer pressure that they feel as if they want to be appear to be intelligent people. They want to be perceived as thinking, thoughtful, sophisticated people, and they don't see how they can maintain their faith and do that.
And the professors are almost the parents now. They're in the role of the authority figures, the parents, the educated ones that they should follow. So when you have some learned professor gets up there, you're a freshman in college or something like that, and this professor, in your mind, their learning is off the charts because you're new at this, and they get up and scoffingly say, no one with a brain believes these things. The feeling you get is evolution. This is fact. This is science. This is not theory. This is what we know. And you basically have to stick your head in the sand and deny truth to continue to believe the Bible. Yet it was through study of scientific evidence that the reality of God came alive in your life. What happened?
Well, you know, in a sense, I understand, you know, what you're saying, because when I was an undergraduate student, at this point I was an agnostic for all intents and purposes. I deeply admired my professors who I took courses in biology from, and they taught that life's origin and life's history was explained exclusively through an evolutionary framework. And I, because I admired them so much, I accepted that idea uncritically. But when I went to graduate school and began to understand in a detailed way how life works at its most fundamental level, at a biochemical level, I was just absolutely astounded at not the complexity, though life is incredibly complex, but how clever and elegant and sophisticated these systems were.
And so, give me some kind of an analogy, either with a machine or a message written on the sand somewhere. I mean, how complex, how elegant is the design of life and the cell and so on?
Well, you know, one of the things that I find absolutely amazing as a biochemist is that the defining features of biochemical systems are identical to those features we would recognize as evidence for the work of a human mind. And so this is like the old watchmaker analogy, mm-hmm. that if certain features reflect the work of a mind in human designs, and we see those same features manifested in a superior way inside the cell, that is, in a sense, evidence for the work of a mind. But, for example, DNA is an information storage molecule, and the way that the cell's machinery manipulates DNA is directly analogous to how computer systems operate. And so much so that scientists are actually trying to build computers out of DNA. This is called DNA computing. It's an emerging area in nanoscience and in biotechnology. And they're able to do that because literally inside the cell, you have this incredibly sophisticated computer system that is directly analogous to a man-made system. And so it's things like that, that when you see these types of features, and this is just the tip of the iceberg,
right.
You know, it's to me suggests the work of a mind. But as a graduate student, because I was in the mode of learning everything I could learn, I wanted to know, how do scientists explain where biochemical systems come from? This is called the origin of life question. And so on my own, now I was equipped to really critically evaluate the arguments that were being presented.
And that's one thing. I mean, Richard Dawkins said, we're still working on that. The origins of life, we're still pretty fundamental.
Right.
We're still working on that.
Exactly. But here I was, you know, about 25, 26 years ago, as a burgeoning graduate student, when I looked at the explanations, I said, this doesn't work. I knew enough about chemistry to say this simply doesn't work. And over the last, you know, couple of decades or so, the more that scientists have worked on the origin of life problem, the more profound the problem has become, to the point that really there is not an explanation for the origin of life. There's been almost 60 years of work on this problem, but there's really no true advance that has been made. There's a lot of ideas that are bantered around. There's a lot of work that's been done, but it's important not to confuse activity with actual progress. You know, and so a lot of activity, but no real progress.
All right, so is your answer simply a faith answer that God did it, or did God do it in a way that makes scientific sense to you?
God did it in a way that makes scientific sense to me, because not only does the evolutionary explanation fall short, but again, you see so many different features in the cell's chemistry that reflects the work, you know, of a mind. And what's intriguing is there's this whole new enterprise now called synthetic biology, where scientists are trying to go in the lab and literally create artificial life from scratch, trying to produce organisms unlike anything found in nature. And surprisingly, there's a lot of progress being made in this area. I expect within maybe 5 to 10 years, there's going to be genuine advances so that people will have succeeded in making some kind of entity in the laboratory that truly is a life form. But what's interesting about this work from an apologetic standpoint is that in order to produce even the semblance of a living system requires so much ingenuity.
Uh-huh.
And you know, and as a biochemist, when I look at the work that's being done, it's with great admiration. These are some of the best minds in the world that are doing such incredibly creative, inventive, things in order to make life, that it's demonstrating that apart from intelligent agency, life can't come from non-life. So it's a completely different way to argue for the necessity of a creator.
It would almost be like after 100 years of the world's greatest scientists working on this, they make a robot that can say yes or no. So that would suggest that the human being has much more intelligent design. All right, we'll be back with Dr. Fuzrana. We'll get your calls. The website, reasons.org, one of the finest apologetics websites and top of the line with scientific apologetics, reasons.org. Take advantage of the resources there.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Friends, it is my joy here on The Line of Fire broadcast and the extended work we do with speaking and lecturing and debating and writing to be on the front lines of Jewish apologetics, front lines of cultural apologetics, and other key areas. And because of my heart for this and my background in this, I so appreciate those who are top-flight scientists, astronomers, and biochemists, and others who are apologists without compromising their brain and without compromising their faith. They find they can love God with heart and mind together. My guest, Dr. Fuzrana, Executive Vice President of Research and Apologetics. He holds a PhD in chemistry with a focus on biochemistry from Ohio University. If you've got a question for my guest, Dr. Rana, 866-34-TRUTH-866-348-7884. Fuzz, let's take a call, and then I want to go back to some of the things that people are intimidated by and why we have no reason to back away. We have no reason to have to apologize or anything. We have truth in God. We have truth that has been revealed in nature. Alex on Southold, Long Island, welcome to The Line of Fire.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Doing very well, thank you.
Good. I just like to say that in my experience, growing up in the church, and you know, big churches, and having a lot of kids there, that the problem that what I've seen as a kid and growing up as an adult isn't so much the atheists or the people who believe that we came from apes. For what I've found for myself is more that the Christian foundation from youth wasn't very strong and being built up. So as they grew up and went away from the home, they were easily swayed or easily pushed away.
So in other words, just being solid disciples of Jesus, people of the word, people with a solid walk with God, people who understand the fundamentals of the faith, that would, the roots would be deep enough, it would withstand a lot of the attacks that come later. Fuzz, what do you say to that?
I think there's a lot to be said for that point, is that, you know, one of the things I noticed with my kids when they were going through their Sunday school experience is that they knew a whole lot of scripture, but they didn't really have a good theological underpinning, even at an elementary level. And so I don't think there's a lot that's taught in terms of even just theological ideas. There's not a whole lot, I think, that's really encouraged in terms of discipleship in a real way. But I think part of that process of discipleship is being prepared to address difficult questions. Because if you've never heard questions about, you know, what happens to people who have never heard the gospel, let's say, if you have never wrestled through those types of questions in a safe environment where there's people there to mentor you, when you're out in an unsafe environment and those questions arise, you're going to be stumped, and that's going to erode your faith no matter how much training you've gone through in terms of discipleship and other things, you know. And so
So you can really, and Alex, I absolutely agree that first things first, solid relationship with the Lord, solid biblical foundations in life. What happens is, though, when sometimes you get bombarded and it's unexpected and you're in a new environment and it's real spiritual attack, and your knees get weak, your foundations start to feel like they're crumbling.
But you know, for example, it's been several years ago now, but I was speaking at a Christian high school and talking about the whole question of human origins. And one of the students who was a senior at that high school came up to me afterwards and said, I've never heard about Neanderthals. Okay, so here she is about ready to graduate from, probably with as a good student from a Christian high school.
From a Christian high school.
And she's going to go to college. And if she goes to a secular college and she's never even heard of Neanderthals, what happens in an anthropology course when the professor shows the descent of man?
All right, well, just help us here then. Let's take a minute or two. We can pursue this on the other side of the break, but maybe we can get a concise answer. So what about Neanderthals? Doesn't that prove that the whole Adam and Eve thing is false and the Bible's false about creation and all that?
No, because, for example, you can understand these creatures as being creatures that were made by God that existed and then essentially went extinct, that they had some level of intelligence and emotional capability, but they didn't have a spiritual makeup. And you can also show that the idea that Neanderthals evolved into humans is scientifically invalid. Most anthropologists do not believe that Neanderthals could have evolved into humans. That idea has been pushed to the wayside.
You don't hear that much, though.
You don't, based on isolating DNA from Neanderthals and comparing it to human DNA. But yet, when you go into an anthropology course, here's this Bronsky descent of man, icon showing that the hominids going through this transition from an ape-like creature to humans. And if students start seeing, well, here's all this fossil evidence, it's clear that humans must have evolved. I've never heard of Neanderthals. Nobody told me about that in high school. I have no way to process other than to say, my faith must be wrong. There must not be an Adam
and Eve. And what else are they hiding from me?
Yes.
Fuzz, if folks go to the reasons.org website, what will they find there?
A whole lot of resources, most of which are available for no cost. There's all kinds of articles that we've written across the board dealing with a wide range of issues in science faith. We have a whole bunch of podcasts that people can download at no cost that deal with different aspects of the science faith, arena. And so podcasts, articles, and of course we have a number of books and DVDs that we make available for a small price.
Yeah, and the resources are great, and they are very fairly priced because it's a great ministry work you're doing. Good stuff for families and kids there?
Yes, we're paying more and more attention to developing resources for children. So we have a new series called the Impact Events series targeting high school students. We have something called Reasons Academy, which is an online training program that students can take in high school that begins to equip them to know how to bring science and faith together.
Wonderful. All right, friends, that is reasons.org. Those that will not be able to catch the entire hour I have with Dr. Fuzz Rana, just go to my website, askdrbrown.org, and click on the Line of Fire. You'll be able to download for free the entire broadcast and recommend it to your friends. Recommend the reasons.org website. Take advantage of the resources there. Get the books, get the DVDs. You will be enriched as a young person, as a parent, as an educator, as a leader. And remember, all this week, our theme, it's time to take a stand. And we're asking every one of you who are blessed by this ministry, who are helped by the broadcast, who've been challenged and strengthened to stand with us. As Fuzz could tell you, here in our offices, we do not spend a lot of money on offices. And if you looked at some of the ways our guys walk around here, we're trying to get some money to get some new clothes for some of our workers. No, seriously, we're frugal, and we pour the money right back out into ministry outreach. So stand with us. I want to send you, as my thank you for your gift of any size, the audio CD, The Spineless Gospel of Tolerance and Acceptance. It's a message you need to hear. You'll find tremendously relevant. Listen to it in your CD player, in your car, in your computer. And then the mini book, The Jesus Manifesto. These tools will stir you and strengthen you. My thank you for your gift of any size, and that gift will be multiplied by a donor this week. So call 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. As you stand with us, you're helping us make a difference here and around the world. 1-800-278-9978. Back with more.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, just to clarify here, Randy is wondering if I mentioned the new outfit because he's wearing a blue painting shirt, basketball shorts with threaded sneakers. Actually, you said shreed it. That's a typo there. If you're going to send me an email during the broadcast, man, you got to screen it better. Shreed it sneakers. No, I didn't even notice that. I did not even notice that. But if that's an appeal for a raise now that you're a married man with a baby and you, all you have is shreed it sneakers, we'll put that in the 2018 budget. Get back to you. All right. Thanks for joining us, friends. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. When I do have a guest during interviews, I do hog the time. As a Jew, hog the time is just a euphemism here. I do hog the time because I like to devote as much time to the interview. But my guest in the studio with me, Dr. Fuzz Ronit, he's Vice President of Research and Apologetics at Reasons to Believe, the website reasons.org. He is a trained biochemist with a PhD in that field. Hey, what's the difference between just majoring in chemistry? You got to be real simple with this answer, otherwise we'll be lost. Majoring in chemistry, majoring in biology, or majoring in biochemistry?
Okay, well, chemistry is essentially the study of matter. What is the structure of matter? How does it undergo transformation? And so biochemistry is essentially the application of chemistry to biological systems. And what's interesting about biochemistry is that you're then not only looking at, again, the structure of matter that makes up life and how does it undergo transformation, but then the added interesting thing is how does that structure and chemical transformation contribute to life processes that are, again, critical for organisms to exist, whereas biology is the study of life in a general sense. So
it's a nice intersection then.
Yeah, so yeah, biochemistry is kind of a fusion of biology and chemistry in a sense.
All right, so we've got a couple minutes just in our first segment here of this half hour. We were talking about DNA earlier and the clear intelligence behind it. Again, it's one thing if you're walking down the shore of the beach and the waves are coming in and out. It's like, wow, there's a beautiful pattern in the sand. It's another thing if the waves come out and you see a one-line message, you know, Fuzz Rana, you need to call home now. There's an emergency. Here's the number. That didn't just happen.
Right.
There's intelligence behind it. Can we talk about DNA? All right, I use Microsoft Word as my word processor. That's, you know, pretty detailed programming, software programming. How does that compare with the programming in DNA?
Well, I mean, in a sense, DNA is orders and orders and orders of magnitude much more complex. And in fact, we still don't really understand how the information in DNA is essentially not only encoded, but how it is regulated and it's functionally expressed. Because not only does DNA contain information, again, that's needed to run the entire cell's operation, but that information has to be accessed at different times under different conditions. And when it's directing the production of, let's say, certain types of proteins that carry out activities in the cell, it also has to know how much of that protein to direct the production of. So it's an incredibly complex system with hierarchical levels of organization and regulation that we still are learning about. And the more that we're learning, the more phenomenal the regulation is, and even just, you know, the structure of the DNA itself is. You know, as I mentioned earlier, there's this analogy between how, again, DNA is manipulated by the cell's machinery and computers. In fact, scientists have even discovered that embedded within the DNA molecule itself is something called an even bit parity code, which for people who are computer scientists, they'll know immediately what that is. But it's essentially a method for detecting error in data transmission that computer scientists use. And so built into the structure of DNA is this even bit parity code.
Wow. So you've got the sophisticated computer and the sophisticated software. And the idea that it just happened is, I mean, I don't understand how someone could not believe in intelligence behind all this. All right, we'll be back.
It's It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Our theme this week, it's time to take a stand. It so happens that this week we're also scheduled to have a leading scientific apologist, Dr. Fuzz Rana, with Reasons to Believe, working with the well-known astronomer, Dr. Hugh Ross, and a wonderful team there. The website, reasons.org. We're talking about standing for truth. We're talking about the fact that we don't have to yield biblical truth, biblical ground, based on scientific evidence. If there is scientific truth, we'll find it to be in harmony with what God has ultimately said and done, because all truth is in harmony with God. What I mean is, if it's established truth, it does not disprove the existence and reality of God. I've got a question for Dr. Rana, 866-34-TRUTH. So, Fuzz, before the break, we were talking about the overwhelming evidence of intelligence in terms of the DNA and in terms of how the human body, cell, everything works with it, both the computer and the software, that you have massively detailed information, and that information has to come from a mind. When Dr. John Lennox was on with me, a mathematician and scientist at Oxford University, he went back to, in the beginning was the word. So intelligence at the foundation of the universe. Einstein's famous comment that the universe is intelligible, it can be understood, pointing to some type of design. You've got brilliant people. They're not all these monstrous, hateful atheists. They look at all this information, and yet they come away saying it just happened. Have you ever talked to them about that?
Yeah, and at the end of the day, I've had a lot of conversations, both one-on-one as well as part of public forums, where we've done debates or dialogues about science faith issues with non-believers who are scientists. And it's not so much the evidence as it is the philosophy that ultimately undergirds science itself. And I think this is a very important point for people to appreciate, is that science is intrinsically atheistic. And what I mean by that is, when you engage in science as it is done in contemporary times, you have to embrace this system called methodological naturalism. That basically says, whether you believe in God or not, when you operate as a scientist, you operate as if God doesn't exist. You suspend all belief in the supernatural, and you only look for naturalistic, mechanistic explanations.
Okay. And so you've already made a presupposition that rules out certain evidence.
Exactly. And so when scientists look at something like DNA, and it's in the elegant design of DNA, the fact that it is loaded with information, they readily acknowledge that this is an incredibly awesome, amazing, marvelous system. They stand in awe and celebrate the beauty of the creation. Mm-hmm. It's like a Romans 1:20 response to the creation, but yet because they've bought into methodological naturalism, they cannot appeal to intelligent agency as the explanation for DNA. It has to be some kind of evolutionary mechanism. So nobody's explained, from an original life standpoint, where information comes from, how chemical selection can generate information, but yet they're convinced there has to be a mechanism. It's not because the evidence is pointing in that direction. It's because they are committed to a naturalistic perspective because of methodological naturalism. And so part of what we do at Reasons to Believe is actually argue against that as a organizing framework for science, saying that it is possible to do science and still incorporate intelligent agency into explanations. But that's really what's at play, is more the philosophy than anything else.
So you'll have a Dawkins writing about the greatest show on earth and the wonder, the amazing, awesome wonder of evolution, and they're awestruck by it without saying it. Just go a little bit further with your awe and start to worship, and you're going in the right direction.
That's exactly right. But even Dawkins, in his book, The Blind Watchmaker, in the introduction says, biology is the study of complicated things that give the appearance of having been designed for a purpose. And so even Dawkins is admitting that the first reaction you have when you look at biological systems, and this is clearly the case for biochemical systems, is that they look as if they are designed. But instead of going down that path, saying if they're designed for a purpose or appear to be designed for a purpose, maybe indeed they have been, scientists are essentially hamstrung and they can't go down that path.
Right. So if you were at a crime scene and everything absolutely pointed to XYZ happening, that this person came in with this weapon and did this, but you have concluded that those weapons don't exist and that person doesn't exist, then you're going to have to come up with other solutions to the problem, even though the evidence clearly points in one direction.
Yeah, and to extend the analogy, if all the evidence points to murder, but you've adopted a philosophical system that says human beings don't murder one another, then even though all the evidence is suggesting that, you simply can't evoke that as an explanation because a priori you have predetermined that human beings don't commit murder. So therefore, you have to come up with some other explanation.
So basically, we can sum up what we're saying about this and what Christians need to hear and be undergirded in their hearts and minds is that we are not shutting our minds to the evidence and to possibilities. We simply find complete harmony with our faith in God, relationship with God, scriptures, and scientific fact, whereas others are actually excluding possibility on a fundamental a priori basis that it cannot be, or miracles cannot happen. Therefore, no matter what the evidence says, they will have to be in denial.
That's exactly right. And for a young student going to college, it's important to realize that much of the evidence that people point to in favor of an evolutionary paradigm can be easily understood from a creation perspective or a design perspective. It's just that you're never exposed to that perspective in the course.
Got it. All right, let's go back to the subject of Neanderthals. Nancy in Manhattan, you've got a point or question about theories about Neanderthals for our guest. Please go for it. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Hi. I was very interested in hearing a little bit more about the comparisons of DNA between Neanderthals and humans. And the reason I said that is because I've been in nursing since 1970, okay? And during that time period, if you remember, Lucy was dug up out of the ground and a few other things came up. And I was in the process of helping doctors deliver babies at that time and taking care of them in intensive care nurseries. And I noticed that there were certain deformities. And I also care for someone right now that has one of those deformities called microcephaly. And she has a pointy head. She has a large jaw. She's in her 50s, which is unusual for them to live that long. And she likes show tunes, and she claps, and she dances, and she knows when she's pretty, and, you know, because we dress her up, and this kind of thing. And this lady is totally human, came from human parents, but she has this deformity, which would make somebody on the surface think that maybe she wasn't human if her skeleton was dug up out of the ground. Now, that was my theory, was that that's what they were finding, you know, as they went on archaeology expositions. Is my theory incorrect based on the knowledge that you have regarding DNA now?
Yeah, that's a very interesting idea that you're proposing, and you know, while it is true that you do indeed see human beings with deformities, and maybe some of those deformities might be reminiscent of what's observed in the fossil record for the hominids, mm-hmm. the fact of the matter is it's hard to argue that Neanderthals or the other hominids represent some kind of human, you know, deformity, if you will. For example, mm-hmm. we have about well over 100 Neanderthal specimens. Many of them are almost nearly complete skeletons, and the entire skeletal morphology of Neanderthals is so different from that of humans that uh-huh. many anthropologists have concluded that they have to be a separate species and they could not have evolved into humans. But we now mm-hmm. have DNA that we've isolated from well over 20 Neanderthal specimens. It all indicates Neanderthals were a distinct species and they couldn't have evolved into humans. Mm-hmm. In addition to that, there are people who've worked out the developmental pathway that Neanderthals take going from infancy to adulthood, and that mm-hmm. developmental trajectory is very different than that of humans. So there's mm-hmm. three separate lines of evidence that all indicate that they are something very different. And mm-hmm. the archaeological evidence associated with Neanderthals indicates that they were not behaving even in a sophisticated way as the patient that you care for who has microcephaly. Mm-hmm. In fact, a few months ago, I had the privilege of hanging around for a few days a world-class paleoanthropologist who studies specifically the origin of humanity and compares humans to Neanderthals as his expertise. It's a guy by the name of Ian Tattersall, who's at the American Museum of Natural History. And one of the points that he made very clearly is that when humans appear on the scene, suddenly out of nowhere, there's a sophisticated behavior that they're showing that's completely different from the Neanderthals. Where he said humans are completely different from Neanderthals, the rapidity of that emergence is so dramatic that it's mind-boggling, in his words.
Great. Hey, Nancy, thank you for a great question. Thank you, Fuzz, for a great answer. We'll continue the discussion when we come back. In fact, let's focus on the uniqueness of human beings created in the image of God. What makes us so different?
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
My guest this entire hour has been Dr. Fuzz Rana. I wish I had endless hours to talk to you about scientific issues. They're so important. Our theme this week, it's time to take a stand. And we're talking today about scientific apologetics, taking a stand for truth. It is... I don't know that there's a more critical area of an apologetics for young people, for college age, for high school, because this is, it's critical. I mean, so many get picked off, so many lose their faith, and so many come back when they realize that there are truthful answers. The website for Reasons to Believe, reasons.org. All right, we have friends who are young earth creationists who won't accept some of the things we're talking about now. But from your viewpoint, you have these different creatures over periods of centuries or millennia, whatever it is. So you've got apes, you've got hominids, the Neanderthals, and so on, and then you've got humans. So the evolutionist would say, well, the apes turned into hominids, and the hominids turned into human beings. And you're saying, even from an evolutionary perspective, it doesn't work because there's a distinct break. I mentioned an article my wife Nancy had sent me about orangutans in a zoo. They can use iPads now. And they have certain intelligence, but you're saying their brains are not programmed for grammar, for language structure, and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's very clear when you begin to examine the archaeological record associated with the hominids, you know, Lucy and Homo erectus and Neanderthals, that while they were making tools of sorts, which typically consisted of taking one rock and hitting another rock, and the flake represents the tool, that the tool use was crude, it was cumbersome, it was expedient many times where they would make the tool and abandon it. So they are clearly creatures that have some intellectual capability, emotional capability. But what's interesting is the behavior that you see among the hominids is not much different than what we're observing for chimpanzees, orangutans, and gorillas.
Mm-hmm.
Chimps have been observed in the wild to make stone tools.
Right, right.
And so it's not the fact that they're making tools that in and of itself is remarkable, but rather, when you compare what they're doing with humans, the behavior is orders and orders of magnitude different. While humans make tools too, we're using incredibly sophisticated manufacturing processes, even at the very beginning when humans appear on the scene, manufacturing a wide range of sophisticated tools. The hunting practices were sophisticated. There's artistic expression, musical expression, none of which you see in any of the hominids. And there's very complex social structures. There is suddenly multi-generations that are part of the family unit, which you don't see for the hominids. Humans are completely different than, in comparing the archaeological record, than anything else. And it's called the sociocultural Big Bang, or the human revolution. Out of nowhere, when humans appear, is this sudden sophisticated behavior that I believe is consistent with the idea that human beings are made in God's image.
All right, so if I gave you an analogy, it's like one day we have some kind of creature pounding on a tree to make a sound, and the next day you have a synthesizer creating everything. It's like how to get from one to the other.
Exactly.
All right, we've got 2-3 minutes. How else are we made uniquely in the image of God? What is different about human beings than the rest of creation?
Well, I think also the fact that we have a moral capability. no other creature displays any kind of understanding intrinsically of right and wrong. You know, I think we have this desire for worship. You see, unique among humans, religious expression. Human beings bury their dead, and that burial is clearly ritualistic. Neanderthals may have buried their dead. This is still controversial. But if they were burying their dead, it was nothing much more than covering bodies with a little bit of dirt. And so, you know, we have this religious sensibility that no other creature has ever displayed, this capacity for, again, music and art, which I think is incredible, this capacity for symbolic expression, you know, a moral, again, as I said, a moral sense, none of that you see at all within any other creature on the planet. And so clearly humans stand apart. There is a human uniqueness. More and more anthropologists are acknowledging, again, that humans not only are unique, but again, we're in a completely different category. As I was mentioning earlier, Ian Tattersall said that when you look at Neanderthals, their behavior suggests a souped-up primate. When you look at humans, they're not souped-up primates. We're completely different, a different category of creature, which I think finds perfect explanation in the idea of the image of God.
Yeah, just when you start talking about music and arts and all that, I looked to my right and I saw, I just got a text message from our oldest grandchild who's 11 years old and now has a cell phone. You know, puppies don't do that.
No.
You know, just there's something about the human being and the communication and the creativity. It's, and when we recognize that, we recognize the potential for good, potential for destruction. Fuzz, we're about out of time. Some of the books you've written and others that they can find on the website.
Sure. If people are interested in the question of human origins, I would recommend the book Who Was Adam, which deals with the scientific and biblical synthesis when it comes to the human origin question. Also have written books on the origin of life, biochemical design, and synthetic biology, a book called Creating Life in the Lab.
And as I have some of the books and have looked at others, they are scientifically based, but they're not written for scientists only.
No, we tried it as much as possible to make them accessible.
Right. So folks with a background on that, they can dig deeper. But go to the website, reasons.org. Check it out. Recommend it to your friends because everybody's got somebody that they know they love asking these questions. Fuzz, a joy to have you and have a great
time. Thanks for having me.
Great time teaching at Southern Evangelical Seminary. Friends, another reminder, our theme this week, it's time to take a stand. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about being communities of resistance, the call to God's people to be voices of resistance and communities of resistance in the midst of a godless culture and often a compromised church. And I want to encourage every one of you that believes in what we're doing, you've been blessed by the testimonies you hear, your own life has been enriched, stand with us. We're at just another critical time in our ministry growth as God has given us amazing open doors. The doors are open wide, and now we can go as far as you'll stand with us to go. So here's the number to call, 1-800-278-9978. Your gift of any size, those that have little, wonderful. Others will give more to make up for it. I want to get this to every one of you. My audio CD preached 2 months ago at Nyack College in New York City, The Spineless Gospel of Tolerance and Acceptance, and my mini book, The Jesus Manifesto, A Call to Revolution, God's Way, not with violence and hatred and intimidation, but God radically changing us, and we go and radically change our world. You can also become a monthly torchbearer, supporting us on a monthly basis, and we'll send those gifts out to you as well as another surprise. Here's the number to call, 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978, or just go online to askdrbrown.org. If you click to make a one-time donation, we will send these out to you automatically, The Spineless Gospel of Tolerance and Acceptance on a CD and the mini book, Jesus Manifesto. Call 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today, friends, you have nothing to fear from scientific truth. You have nothing to fear that scientists have disproven the existence of God or the truth of the Bible. The more we study, the more we learn, the more we bow down and acknowledge the glories and wisdom and power of our Creator. It's time to take a stand for gospel truth. I've never seen so much compromise and twisting of Scripture in my life. Now is the time to go back to the foundations.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, I've seen a lot in 40-plus years in the Lord. I've seen people come and go. I've seen ministries raised up and fall. I've seen people start with the truth and fall away. I have seen people compromise their message and compromise their ministry over the years, but I have never seen something quite like what we are seeing today, as if biblical truth is just up for grabs. As if you have your way, I have mine, is just the only way to go. The assault on absolutes, people almost exalting uncertainty, and who really knows, and saying the journey is more important than the destination, as if a nice journey to hell is better than a bad journey to heaven. Friends, we're in an urgent hour today, and I want to encourage you that now is the time to take a stand. Michael Brown, thanks for joining us today. That's our theme for this entire week. It's time to take a stand. Just spent a delightful hour with biochemist Dr. Fuzz Rana talking about scientific apologetics, talking about the fact that we do not need to yield. We do not need to throw out fundamental biblical beliefs because of what science has discovered and what science has learned, that in point of fact, scientific truth does not contradict biblical truth. I want to focus now on something else this hour. And can I be candid with you? Can I open my heart and share with you honestly? I am not the only guy on the radio or the only speaker or teacher or preacher who's preaching the truth. That would be an absolutely idiotic, ridiculous statement or sentiment. I have to be a complete fool to believe something like that. And it says in Proverbs chapter 3, verses 7 and 8, don't be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord, depart from evil, and that will bring healing to your bones and tonic to your whole body. The last thing I'm saying is that we are the last ones holding on to the truth here. No, when Elijah the prophet said, I'm the only one left, in 1 Kings 18 and 19, that was his mentality. 1 Kings 19, he tells that to the Lord. The Lord says, I've reserved 7,000 who haven't bowed the knee to Baal. There's always a remnant. I understand that. And I'm enriched by the teaching and preaching and ministry and books and writing and of other leaders and other believers in the body. At the same time, I recognize that we're in an urgent hour. At the same time, I recognize that people are running from the front lines. At the same time, I recognize that compromise is rampant. At the same time, I recognize things that were fundamental biblical truths that we weren't questioning a generation ago, we're questioning now. And it's not because we have new evidence. It's not because we suddenly understand the Bible better. It's because certain beliefs are too unpopular. Certain beliefs go against the grain, and people get uneasy, they get uncomfortable, and better to be politically correct, better to seem intelligent in the eyes of man, better to seem sophisticated than to be branded some fundamentalist backwoods preacher. 866-34-TRUTH, if you'd like to weigh in with a question or comment, 866-348-7884. You can weigh in with an amen, you can weigh in with a disagreement. And since we're not avoiding controversy, now that the NAACP has endorsed the legalization of same-sex so-called marriage, I've posted an article based in part on a chapter in my book, A Queer Thing Happened to America, but then I revised it and updated it for the website. It's called Why Gay is Not the New Black. Why Gay is Not the New Black. You can read it on townhall.com right now. Back with a whole lot more. Prepare to be stirred.
Fire we please, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us today on The Line of Fire. Our theme this week, it's time to take a stand. There are times when we have to say enough is enough. There are times where we have to draw lines in the sand. This is one of those times. This is a time of unique compromise in the body. This is a time of unique capitulating from moral foundations. This is a time of unique caving in when things are too unpopular, when there's too much pressure, when it's too difficult, when it's too costly. Believers caving in, or more subtly giving way to the spirit of the age. Hey, we're sophisticated. Hey, we have a better way of looking at things. Hey, We've now come up with a much more acceptable gospel message that removes the reproach of the cross, removes the reproach of following Jesus, removes the foolishness of the cross, and preaches a wisdom that the world accepts. By God's grace, that will never happen here with me and this broadcast. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Online, askdrbrown.org. I will take some calls. I will interact with you on this as well. I want to share some scripture with you in a moment, some quotes to stir your heart. But may I speak honestly with you from my heart? I think that's why you listen to me, because you know that's who I am and that's what you're going to get. You know that you're not going to hear, just made-up stuff to sound nice, or things to appeal to the crowds, or some professional speaker that doesn't tell you the truth. You're going to get my heart. I want to share with you honestly, friends, that some of the stations where we are right now, you've been listening to me for 3-4 years. Some maybe only the last year, maybe you just discovered me a week ago, but some of you have been listening to me regularly for 3-4 years. I can't tell you what a privilege that is. I can't tell you what it means to me that you have found it important enough to make it your business to listen on a regular basis. I know some have been downloading an hour or two of podcasts a day and you listening to all the shows and catching them. One of our grads working in communist China told me that my broadcast has been banned from China. They can't get it by way of internet for several years, but they found a way around it so that they can listen to the shows afterwards. That means so much to me, and I take it very, very seriously. In fact, James had called in from Winston-Salem, quoting from James, Jacob chapter 3, verse 1, that not many should want to be teachers, because those who are teachers will face greater judgment. We'll be held accountable. You know how seriously I take it that when I'm speaking on the radio, that I can be speaking to hundreds of thousands of people, I mean, potentially millions, but at given moments, hundreds of thousands of people, other times tens of thousands of people, potentially millions of people through radio and internet. You know how seriously I take that before God? You know how seriously I weigh my words? We may joke about fun things, or I may tell you a funny story with my grandkids, but when I'm speaking about the oracles of God, the truths of God, man, that's heavy stuff. That's heavy stuff. I take it seriously. God's put it in my heart to be a voice of moral, cultural, spiritual revolution. I live for this. I live to honor the Lord and please Him. And this is what He's called me to do and prepared me for this for decades. But I want to appeal to you to stand with me and help. I want to appeal to you to stand with me and help by becoming a monthly torchbearer, supporting this ministry with at least $25 or more per month. If you do that, we send you a new message every month. We give you 15% discount on our online bookstore and access to all of our online classes. We have 3 there now, and I promise we are adding a few more shortly. So free access to our online classes. And above all, you have the privilege of helping us do what we do. When I'm on the road and someone comes up to me with a smile and say, I'm a torchbearer, boy, I'm so blessed and encouraged to know that. And some of you are unable to support us on a monthly basis, or you don't feel led to do that right now. You want to help with a one-time gift. Every one of you that can, large to small, don't worry about the amount. It's just if everyone does what they can, our immediate needs will be met, and we can continue to do what we're doing and reach even more and more people. I want to send you an audio CD of a message I preached 2 months ago at Nyack College in New York City called The Spineless Gospel of Tolerance and Acceptance. The Spineless Gospel of Tolerance and Acceptance on an audio CD. You can listen to it in your car, your computer, your MP3 player. And then my mini book, The Jesus Manifesto, A Call to Revolution, that will light a fresh spark in your heart to be a world changer through the life and power of the gospel. My thank you for your gift of any size, but if everyone that can stand with us would do so, it would really move us forward, and we have a donor standing by to multiply your gifts so every $10 becomes $15, every $100 becomes $150, every $1,000 becomes $1,500. Here's the number to call right now, 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978, or just go online, askdrbrown.org. If you click on Becoming a Torchbearer, we'll send you those two resources plus an additional free book that will surprise you with in the mail. If you send your one-time donation, you don't have to fill out anything else. Just do that, and we'll send these resources out to you immediately. Our thank you to you. 866-34-TRUTH. Before I go to the phones, listen to what Jesus said. Make every effort to enter through the narrow door, because many, I tell you, will try to enter and will not be able to. Wow. Do we hear that a lot? Do we hear those words of Jesus quoted? Oh, we love to quote, I've come that you might have life and have it more abundantly. I'm the good shepherd. No one can pluck you out of my hand. We love to quote those words of Jesus. How about these words? Make every effort to enter through the narrow door, because many, I tell you, will try to enter and will not be able to. Matthew 7, 13 and 14, enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it, but small is the gate, and narrow the road that leads to life, and only a few find it. Wow, that's what Jesus said. Jesus knows better than we do. What do we make of what he had to say? 866-34-TRUTH. It's time to take a stand. Ken in Raleigh, North Carolina, thanks for calling the Line of Fire. Hello, Ken.
Yes, I'm on. Okay, Michael, thanks very much for your ministry. And also, I really subscribe to the Matthew 7:15 verse that you just referenced. I think it's the most jarring verse in all of the Bible, because it's so applicable today. My main reason for calling has to do with what we just recently went through here in North Carolina with regards to the Marriage Protection Amendment. I'm in the midst of actually looking for a church after being associated with one for 11 years and approaching the leadership of the church with regard to how come we're not talking about this in diplomatic and gentle and respectful terms to the congregation. I just think it's a serious problem that the churches have where they don't stand for what's really biblical truth with life application principles. So that's the main purpose of my call.
And Ken, obviously I appreciate you not mentioning the name of the church. Was it a denominational church, non-denominational?
Oh, this is the staggering thing, too. It's a non-denominational church. There's nobody with their thumb over you like some of the main denominations who say you can and can't say things. So it's just flabbergasting.
All right, so it was it was an independent church, and basically they could decide what to say or not say without worrying about what headquarters had to say. And of course, headquarters can be good. They can be backing you, or headquarters can be bad. It all depends on what's happening. But when you asked why this was not being addressed, Ken, look, we're not talking about vote Democrat, vote Republican. We're not talking about endorsing a specific candidate. We're saying stand for marriage. Stand against the possibility of an activist judge redefining marriage in North Carolina, redefining what kids are going to be taught, redefining who's a bigot and who's not based on activist judge deciding to redefine marriage. Stand up for marriage. Do what's right. We pushed it strongly at Fire Church, as folks would imagine, that being my home congregation and me being the founding leader there. Why were you told that, and the way you're saying it, respectfully and so on, why were you told that they wouldn't do it?
Basically for a couple of reasons. Number one, we're an apolitical church, which, first of all, this is a nonpartisan issue. We're not endorsing candidates or anybody like that, political parties. It's a political issue. We're not going to be doing this. I was told that we're not supposed to be doing this when I was hired as a senior pastor not so long ago. The real flabbergasting thing to me, too, was this: we have some children in our church, some youth, as we should say, high school or college, that are have friends who are gay, whether gay, lesbian, whatever, and yet we're afraid of losing them. I'm thinking, good gracious, I mean, if you don't say anything and stand for biblical truth, you're already losing them.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It just
boy, and Ken, we got a break, so I got to jump in. Keep listening, because I want to just address this on the other side of the break. What do we do about that? What do we do about that tension? Don't want to turn people off with the stands we take. How do we handle it? Time to take a stand.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us, friends, on the Line of Fire broadcast, 866-34-TRUTH. It is time to take a stand for truth, for righteousness. There's a passage in Isaiah, the 59th chapter, that I've had in the back of my head for a few days as I've been thinking about this broadcast this week, the theme, It's Time to Take a Stand. Tomorrow, I want to talk about our calling to be communities of resistance as God's people. African-American law professor Stephen Carter, and I mentioned being African-American because part of the black church culture was so involved in the front lines of social change in different ways. He calls us to be communities of resistance. I want to talk about that. My role, our role, to be voices of resistance. But Isaiah 59, speaking about the sin of that generation, then it applies at other times. Therefore, justice is far from us, and righteousness does not overtake us. We hope for light and behold darkness, and for brightness, but we walk in gloom. We grope for the wall like the blind. We grope like those who have no eyes. We stumble at newness in the twilight. Among those in full vigor, we like dead men. We all growl like bears, we moan and moan like doves. We hope for justice, but there is none, for salvation, but it is far from us. Justice is turned back, righteousness stands far away. Truth has stumbled in the public squares, uprightness cannot enter. Truth is lacking, and he who departs from evil makes himself a prey. And it's at this point that the Lord himself gets involved and rises up to act. And before the break, was talking to Ken in Raleigh, North Carolina, having to find another church now when the church leadership said that they would not address Amendment 1, the marriage amendment. And one reason they said is they're apolitical. And again, this is not a political issue any more than slavery was a political issue, any more than abortion is a political issue. These are issues of righteousness. These are issues of life. But the other reason they gave Ken was that as he said before the break, that they have kids, high school kids, same-sex attracted, identify as gay or lesbian, and is afraid they'd lose these kids. And you could also say that they turn off their Christian friends that are sympathetic towards their struggles and issues. And this is where we fall into this terrible trap of not speaking the truth because we're afraid we're going to offend someone. And the word the Lord gave me about this issue years back was reach out and resist. Reach out to the people with compassion, resist the agenda with courage. And the first question is, what about all the kids in school that are being impacted negatively by gay activist curriculum in the schools, like SB 48 in California, which is mandatory in all classes, K through 12, teachers can't opt out, students can't opt out. The celebration of gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender history. The impossibility of raising a voice that differs with these things, the gender confusion that's taught to kids at early age, and on. What about taking a stand for those things? What about being concerned about what our kids are being indoctrinated with through the media and through the school system right now? And then within the schools, we want to tell the kids who are same-sex attracted that there is a place of wholeness in Jesus, that regardless of attractions or desires, that God's called us to be holy, and there is a place of wholeness in him, and that Jesus is the one who saves from death, and Jesus is the one who saves from depression and suicide and hopelessness. We want to proclaim that boldly, and at the same time, stand for righteousness. At the same time, say, when it comes down to what's best for families, when it comes down to what's best for our society, when it comes down to us being salt and light, we'll do what's right regardless of cost or consequence. How long are we going to cave in? Well, we want to be sensitive. I understand sensitivity. I also understand where there's often compromise, where we don't speak the truth in love because we're afraid it's going to offend someone. Ken, I want to encourage you to pray for the leadership of the church that you've left, to pray that they'd fulfill the calling of God, to keep yourself from feeling embittered towards them, because I understand how this can happen, and then to throw yourself in with others of like heart, like mind, whether they meet in a home, whether they meet in a cathedral, and go about doing good and making a difference. Thank you, sir, for the call. J. Gresham Machen. Oh, it's 90-something years ago now, close to that, issued warnings about the liberalism of his day, and he realized that so-called liberal Christianity was actually a foreign religion. And he said this in his book: after the apologist has abandoned his outer defenses to the enemy and withdrawn into some inner citadel, he will probably discover that the enemy pursues him even there. When we make peace with the world, when we come up with a compromise message that's acceptable to others, when we dance our way around controversial issues so as not to offend, we're not going to defend our faith in a way that seems offensive or obtrusive to the world. After the apologist, Machen says, has abandoned his outer defenses to the enemy and withdrawn into some inner citadel, he will probably discover that the enemy pursues him even there. Machen said, mere concessiveness, therefore, will never succeed in avoiding the intellectual conflict. In the intellectual battle of the present day, there can be no peace without victory. One side or the other must win. And he says this, is 90 years ago, few desires on the part of religious teachers have been more harmfully exaggerated than the desire to avoid giving offense. Shall I repeat that? J. Gresham Machen. Few desires on the part of religious teachers have been more harmfully exaggerated than the desire to, quote, avoid giving offense. Are we going to be more compassionate than Jesus? More Christ-like than Christ? More full of love, more full of the Spirit? Then why do we think that he offended people, but we won't? I'm not talking about being obnoxious, mean-spirited, offensive in ourselves. One pastor in North Carolina now, unfortunately, his video going viral where he says, here's what we need to do with lesbians and gays, put them in camps with electric fences around them to keep them in there. And after a few years, they'll all die out because lesbians can't reproduce and homosexual men can't reproduce. Oh, God bring that man to a place of sensitivity and understanding of the harmful, destructive nature of those words that he spoke. We don't have to be offensive in terms of demeanor and things like that, but truth is going to offend. And often, if it doesn't offend, it doesn't save, it doesn't set free. It's time to take a stand. I've got so much more to say. Would you help me say it? Would you help me get this message out to more and more people? Would you become a torchbearer, monthly supporter? I'll send you a free book, a surprise book, along with these two resources: The Spineless Gospel of Tolerance and Acceptance, an audio CD, and my mini book, The Jesus Manifesto, A Call to Revolution. Become a monthly torchbearer, or for your one-time gift of any size. Some of you have the ability to be generous. Some have very little. Everyone do what you can, and a donor is going to take your funds and multiply them and exclusively use it for radio. Here's the number, 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. Let's be a voice of moral, cultural, spiritual revolution together. What do you say?
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Boy, my heart, it's burning. It is burning so much that I said boy twice. Boy, my heart is burning for righteousness, for truth, for an uncompromised faith. Rather than bowing down to the age, rather than bowing down to the spirit of the age, rather than trying to twist the word and make it fit the sensibilities of frail, fallen human beings, we need to hold forth the truth without shame, without fear, without compromise. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. The theme this week, it's time to take a stand. I encourage you to listen to the first hour of the broadcast earlier today, my interview with Dr. Fuzz Rana of Reasons to Believe. He is a PhD in biochemistry, brilliant, and communicates simply and clearly, as do all those working at Reasons to Believe. And we can debate issues about young earth creation, old earth. We can debate lots of these things. The fundamental point we want to make is that we do not have to bow down to science. Science supports spiritual truth. Ultimately, that God is the creator of all things. There is nothing in science that refutes God as creator. God is the originator of life. God is the one making human beings uniquely in his image. We don't have to give up ground, friends. We don't have to give up ground. Go to the website, askdrbrown.org. Click on the line of fire. Later today, you can catch the entire broadcast. Anything that you've missed. You can't legislate morality, right? We don't want to get involved in controversial issues, right? Hey, we don't want to offend. I mean, we've got all these little slogans, all these little bywords that we hide behind. I know what God's called me to do. I know what I can do well, and I know what I can't do well. Just having Dr. Rana on, a biochemist, I've got very little scientific background. I can answer some of the questions, the apologetic questions, because I've learned some things sufficiently, but in honesty, you just press behind those things and get into more scientific data. I'm not the one for scientific apologetics. I do not have a scientific background. And I've counseled people over the years. Many times God gives me wisdom based on the word, based on my experience, and I'm happy to help. And then Nancy and I have counseled couples at times over the years, and she in particular has a lot of wisdom to offer. But I'm not the kind of person that you go to for regular counseling. I'm just not gifted in it. I'm not called to do that. I've been a senior leader for many years. I've led a congregation for several months. I've led a ministry team, but I'm not a pastor. Boy, my hat's off to those that know how to shepherd the sheep and really care for the, you know, people doing all kinds of ministry I can't do, people doing children's ministry, and these kids are growing up solid in the Lord and interested in God. Like, wow, my hat's off to them. But I know what I can do. I know what the Lord's called me to do, and he's called me to be a voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution, and he's called me to impart courage. He's called me to stand so that it's easier for you to stand. And as we take down the Goliaths that are out there in Jesus' name, talk about spiritual strongholds, not people. As we take down the Goliaths that are out there, it gives you courage to stand and follow. And as we get hit and attacked and only grow stronger through it, it helps you stand strong. So we're on the air, friends, to be a voice for you. I wrote a new article just posted today on Town Hall called Why Gay is Not the New Black. You'll find it very enlightening, very important, because gay activism is equated with civil rights movement. Is gay the new black, as some black leaders are saying and many civil rights leaders are saying and many gay activists are saying? The answer is absolutely no. N-O. Gay is not the new black. You write articles like this, you're going to take flack. You speak the truth in different settings, secular settings, you're going to get flack, you're going to get mocked, you're going to get attacked, you're going to be called everything under the sun. That's fine. It's for the gospel. I am glad to take the hits because it's for truth, it's for the gospel. And as I stand, I want to encourage you, stand where you are. Not in an obnoxious, self-righteous way, but unashamedly. Stand for truth. Stand for Jesus. Stand for what's right. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us today on The Line of Fire and this entire week. Our theme, it's time to take a stand. We're talking about standing for fundamental gospel truth today. Michael Brown, thanks for joining us. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Just looking at a comment that was posted under my new article, Why Gay is Not the New Black, on townhall.com. And the gentleman, or don't know, it's just initials, gentleman or woman, says, Mr. Brown, you're really going to get yelled at for daring to speak such plain, obvious truths. Correct. I'm going to get yelled at. Correct. I'm going to have people mocking what I'm saying and mocking me and posting nasty things. So come on, people are being killed for the gospel. People are being thrown in jail for the gospel. People are being tortured for the gospel. Parents having their kids taken away from them to be raised in godless regimes and schools. It's happened through the centuries. It's persecution for the faith. Well, now people are really going to think you're crazy. They think you have a persecution complex. I don't care if the world thinks I'm crazy. I don't care if people who oppose biblical values think I'm crazy. I care about them as individuals. I want them to know the truth. If I have the opportunity to sit with them, take them out to a meal and sit face to face and let them share their hearts and do my best with compassion to speak the truth, but I'm not going to back away. We don't want to offend anyone. One pastor was encouraging people in his congregation to invite people to their Resurrection Sunday service and said, look, I guarantee you they can come and they won't be offended. Well, on the one hand, if he meant we won't be jerks, we won't be insensitive, we won't be self-righteous, we won't do things that are offensive and foolish. Well, yes, be wise. Be wise by all means. Don't unnecessarily offend people. But how are you going to preach the gospel without offending somebody? How are you going to preach that Jesus is the only way without offending somebody? How are you going to preach that people need to repent of sin, that Jesus died for their sins, which means they're sinners in need of a Savior? How are you going to do that without offending someone? How are we going to find a way to not offend someone when Jesus didn't find a way to not offend people? When Jesus was constantly under attack, when the religious leaders wanted to kill Yeshua because he was challenging the establishment. And that's the way it's been, be it Christian leaders, be it Jewish leaders, be it Hindu leaders, be it Muslim leaders, be it atheist leaders, be it gay activist leaders, whatever it is, when the establishment gets challenged with the gospel, there's going to be a reaction against it. How is it that Jesus is ultimately crucified as a troublemaker? Jesus is ultimately crucified with the Romans thinking that he's some king that's going to try to bring down Rome, whatever their false accusations against him were. Where the apostles from city to city are called troublemakers, the men who've turned the whole world upside down and on, that all that happens to them, but everybody's going to like us. They're just going to speak well of us. Oh, to be leaders, we should have a good reputation with outsiders. In other words, you should be able to talk to the people at the grocery store. I'll often pick some stuff up on the way home for Nancy, for our home. You should be able to talk to the people there, and they'll say, "Oh yeah, that big guy with the big white mustache, oh yeah, he's a nice guy." Oh no, I've never seen him scream or yell or mistreat any of the workers or use profanity or try to pick up one of the girls. Or you should go to restaurants where I go, and they should be able to speak well. You should go to places where I've had lots of contact back and forth in different settings, and in terms of my character, they should be able to speak well of me if they know me. That doesn't mean we're not going to be hated for the gospel. That doesn't mean people aren't going to reject us and despise us for the truth. Well, if I tell them what I really believe about this, they'll reject me. Well, everybody gets rejected for the truth at one time or another. Jesus says in Luke 6, "Woe to you when all men speak well of you, because that's what they did to the false prophets." Those who say shalom, shalom, peace, peace, all is well, when nothing is well. Those that try to tickle people's itching ears and tell them what they want to hear, oh, they're the ones that will avoid offense for a season, but they'll stand before God and be judged. I want to repeat something I read a few minutes back J. Gresham Machen taking on liberal Christianity in his day, almost 90 years ago, saying that it was ultimately a foreign religion, another religion. He said this: few desires on the part of religious teachers have been more harmfully exaggerated than the desire to, quote, avoid giving offense. Pastors, leaders, fellow workers for the gospel, moms, dads, educators, people of influence listening to me, can you ask yourself some honest questions as I ask myself some honest questions? Can you ask yourself, have you compromised your convictions for the sake of your companions? May I say that again? Have you compromised your convictions for the sake of your companions? Have you held back on some truths because you know they are too costly? Have you avoided conflict because you don't want to offend? Yes, we use wisdom. But the goal of our wisdom is not to dance around issues in such a way that no one understands what we're saying. I've heard people address controversial issues, and the one thing that's clear to me is they do not want to say anything clear, because if they say something clear, they're going to offend. To my astonishment, I watched one time on Larry King Live, he had a number of Christian pastors on his show. And I understand he and other secular broadcasters want to have this gotcha moment. Gotcha. Caught you in that. Set you up so that you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't, however you answer. I understand that. But there is the ability to speak the truth in the midst of it, or to say, hey, Larry, or whoever the person is, the Word of God says this, and I follow Scripture. So he's asking the question about homosexual practice. Is it sin? Well, that's simple enough. Doesn't take a rocket scientist to answer that. We're not saying, is the person fundamentally evil and therefore damned by God? We're not saying, is this the worst possible sin in the world? We're not saying that to have a desire condemns you to hell. Well, a simple question. Homosexual practice. That's what the point of the question was. Is it sin in God's sight? Well, yes, of course. As is fornication, as is adultery, as are many other sins of the flesh, no matter how much romance and attraction is associated with it. Contrary to God's order, contrary to God's will. And he asked this one pastor, very prominent, influential pastor in America. And the pastor says, Larry, what hurts me, this is a few years back when Larry King was still on the air, what hurts me, Larry, is however I answer this question, I'm going to hurt people on both sides. And he wouldn't answer it. That's not wisdom. That's compromise. That's not Solomonic wisdom. Because in the Solomonic wisdom, when he says, all right, cut the baby in half, when two women are saying, that's my baby and her baby died. No, that's my baby and her baby died. That was Solomonic wisdom to bring the truth out by saying, cut the baby in half. And the one woman says, great, fine, cut it in half. And the other says, no, don't do it. He says, okay, that's the mother, the one with the compassion. He brought the truth to light with Solomonic wisdom, but these evasive answers, they don't bring the truth to light. And they're not controversial. You can say Jesus died for every human being. God has great love for every human being. God has great tenderness for those who struggle with same-sex attraction. God has great compassion on those who've been hurt, who've been wounded, who've been bruised, who've been cast out, who've been condemned by the church. God has great care and concern for you. And Jesus has a better way. Yes, homosexual practice is sin, but God calls us to holiness. And everyone, heterosexual, homosexual, is called to be holy. And by God's grace, we can be. We can speak the truth in love, but if our concern, well, we don't want to offend anyone. We don't want to offend the newcomers. Well, you have newcomers every week, don't you? Many churches, every week, they have newcomers, some one or two, some 20 or 30. So it's very common to have newcomers. Well, if you can't offend the newcomers, you got newcomers every week, then when do you tell the whole truth? When do you tell the whole message? When do you get it all out? Here in North Carolina, for pastors to say we're not going to address Amendment 1 because we don't want to be political and we don't want to offend those in the church or family members or kids that are struggling with same-sex attraction, so we're not going to stand up for marriage? We're not going to stand up for what's right? We're not going to stand up for family? We're not going to stand against the redefinition of marriage, which would have massive implications for our families, for our kids, for religious liberties and freedoms. We're not going to stand up about those things because we don't want to offend some people or maybe lose some members, or maybe it's someone who gives a lot of money. God help us. God help us. I'm going to stand before God one day. We are, as parents, we're going to stand before God. As pastors and leaders, we're going to stand before God. As hosts of radio shows, of authors of books, as educators, whoever we are, we're going to stand before God, not to be condemned for our sins as believers, but to give account for our lives. That's sobering enough to make me want to do what's right now. I'd rather offend a person by telling the truth than offend God by not telling the truth to that person.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us today on The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Talking about taking a stand for what's right, and I am without shame, without hesitation, encouraging every one of you to stand with me. The way we handle our funds, the way money is poured out to touch the world, the way we take the first fruits of all money that comes in and pour that into our missionaries, our grads from our ministry schools serving sacrificially around the world, and then take funds and pour them into this radio outreach and enable me to be a voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution, and to do the things we do with writing and traveling and speaking and going to places to do debates and do outreaches without having to have elaborate funding for it, because we've got folks standing with us as a team. Without apology, I encourage you to stand with me. I'll tell you how in a moment. There is a little line from John Bunyan, I believe it was, who said, "I preached as never sure to preach again, as a dying man to dying men." Another pastor from decades, centuries ago, actually said that he preached as if he would go straight from the pulpit to the judgment seat. Now, there can be messages that are full of joy. There can be family messages where you tell a story that brings laughter or brings tears. There are times of just encouraging teaching. But as those speaking the word here through radio, the potential of the amount of people I can speak to any given day is fairly massive. Radio and internet. And writing books, and I know people are going to take what I say seriously. I carry that seriously. And sometimes I wonder if we take seriously enough the position that God puts us in as leaders, as teachers, as preachers, as pastors, as spokesmen from the Lord. You know when I really feel it? Probably the most fun day of the week is Fridays. You've got questions, we've got answers. When people write in with any kind of questions they have, you know how it goes. Many of you have written in, called in. And many of the questions are really heavy. I mean, serious life and death issues that people are working through, trying to wrestle through the meaning of particular verses. And I feel the weight of that. Mike Brown, be careful the way you answer. Be careful with what you say, because your words are going to influence people's lives. And as Paul said, who's sufficient for this? He said, the message we bring, it has the aroma of life or the aroma of death. It's the gospel truth. Who is sufficient for such things? So our sufficiency comes from the Lord. Just as Paul could say, we're not doing this with corrupt motives. We're doing this to honor the Lord and letting him be our ultimate judge. I tell you, that's my heart. And I want to appeal to every one of you listening. Some of you and some of these stations, you've been listening to me for 4 years. Some you've been listening to me for 14 months. Some just discovered the broadcast. But if we've ministered to you, if I've imparted courage to you through this message and strengthened you and helped you grow in the Word and helped you grow in your knowledge of God and helped you be more effective for Jesus, that is my incredible privilege. I was ministering for folks that had me in several times to preach. The pastor's wife said to me Sunday afternoon, she said, you know, you see, or Sunday evening after I brought the second message that day, she said, you seem to have more joy than last time. And it wasn't because I was depressed last time, But I said, I am so in the center of God's will. I am so doing the things he made me and called me to do. And the one burden I have is not being a voice. God's given me a voice. It's not having an open door. He's giving me massive open doors. It is simply paying the bills on each of these fine stations we're on. The advertising that you hear pays a small portion. The rest we pay so that these fine stations can do what they do with excellence and pay their staff and their team to do what they do, to engineer the shows, to get them out with such excellence, to broadcast them on the airwaves. So I want you to stand with me, but I don't want you to just stand with me without me sowing something back into you. So I want to send every one of you listening for your gift of any size whatsoever. Don't be ashamed if you only have a little to give. That's fine. No one's going to embarrass you. Everyone does what they can. It's all proportional. Some have a lot. Some have a little. Call us at 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. And I want to send each of you two things. Number one, an audio CD, The Spineless Gospel of Tolerance and Acceptance. The Spineless Gospel of Tolerance and Acceptance. I preach it at Nyack College in New York City. It is chock full of eye-opening quotes and scripture. And we analyze the spirit that's in the church today, the spinelessness, the spineless gospel of tolerance and acceptance, and how to deal with it and how to speak the truth and do what's right. An audio CD, and then my mini book, The Jesus Manifesto, A Call to Revolution. Your gift of any size, it will be our joy to send these out. You can go online and just click on AskDrBrown.org where it says to give a donation. You can do that, friends. Click on that. You don't have to fill out anything else. The donation comes in, and we will immediately send this out to you. You can also become a monthly torchbearer. In addition to these two resources, I'll send you an additional book as a surprise gift to bless you and thank you for becoming a torchbearer. You can do that online as well, or call this number. Our team is joyfully ready to take your call, 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. One more time, 1-800-278-9978. We'll send you The Spineless Gospel of Tolerance and Acceptance and The Jesus Manifesto, the audio CD, and the mini book. And friends, let us know how we can pray for you. We have folks on our team that love to get prayer requests and love to stand with you and pray. You can send your prayer requests into the website at AskDrBrown.org. Just click contact, send in your prayer needs, troubles you're going through, pressure you're under. We obviously can't individually counsel every single person and take the role of the local church, but you better believe we can pray, we can believe God with you, and we can address many of the issues that come up as they are relevant. Oh, I want to read what Jesus said again. I read it earlier this hour. I want to read it again. Luke 13:24. Make every effort to enter through the narrow door, because many, I tell you, will try to enter and will not be able to. Matthew 7:13-14. Enter through the narrow gate. For wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it. But small is the gate and narrow the road that leads to life, and only a few find it. Let's be that remnant that stands for truth, that does what's right, regardless of cost or consequence. And through you and through me, Jesus touches this world. Tomorrow will be another important broadcast. We'll talk about being communities of resistance in a holy, godly way, and voices of resistance. Also, be sure to read my article on townhall.com. Getting a lot of interesting comments and discussion already. Why gay is not the new black. You'll find it eye-opening. My bottom line today, we are living in a time of extreme compromise. We are living at a time when foundational truths are being questioned and even discarded. Now is the time to hold fast to the truth at any cost, any consequence, and to stand up and say, Lord, here I am. Send me. Use me.